on yellow parchment, drawing show tubes and wires connected to a pair of monstrous green hands and restraints. The main title appears, Don't Look Under the Bed. On a dark night, the view moves along an empty city street.
Middleburg is a middle-sized town in the middle of the country. But sometimes, in my dreams, it felt like someplace else. Somehow familiar, but also very strange.
A red-haired teenage girl frowns in her sleep. The view continues to float through the town of Middleburg, approaching a large ornate building with a clock tower.
Middleburg is where I live. And so does something else.
Her view spirals upward, moving along the side of the building and closer to the clock tower. On the courtyard below stands a metal statue of a boy and girl.
Some people thought Middleburg was dull, that nothing ever happened here. Well, they were very wrong.
The minute hand on the looming clock tower spins. In bed, the girl's closed eyelids flutter. The view floats toward a white-trimmed suburban house. Inside, wind disturbs the curtains of the red-haired girl's window. A sinister shadow with clawed hands glides across the walls of her room. As the girl sleeps, the alarm clock on the nightstand beside her counts up as minutes pass in seconds. In another bedroom, a middle-aged couple sleeps on as numbers on their clock quickly climb. As the clock reaches 7 a.m., it stops. The man sits up in bed as the woman lifts her head in groggy confusion. She glances at the clock and flops back on the bed as the man rises. In the girl's room, the door opens and a long-fingered shadow grows along her wall.
Francis?
In the doorway, her mother stretches.
Francis, time to get up, honey.
As her mother walks away, Francis sleeps on, her mouth open in a gasp. Across the room, a golden-haired doll turns its head towards Francis.
Franny.
She startles awake.
My name is Francis Bacon McCausland. I'm 14 years old. That morning, I was extremely tired.
Later, Francis, her parents, and two brothers gather in the kitchen. Her mother glances out the window.
It's so dark. Must be a storefront moving in.
Not according to the barometer.
Oh, man, maybe it's the end of the world. It sure feels like it.
How would you know what the end of the world felt like? You've never felt it before, have you?
Maybe the clocks are wrong.
Hope springs eternal.
I always set our clocks by the Naval Observatory website. I'll check it out. Burnt trash, and don't forget the paper.
Why do I always have to take out the garbage?
With age comes responsibility, Bert. When you go to college, your sister Frances will take the trash out.
I want to get a dog so he can eat the garbage and he can fix the newspaper.
Dogs have germs.
What would you do with it when you went to college? They don't allow dogs in the dorm room. Maybe you could put it on the roof.
Get real, Frances.
Grow up, Bert.
Get real, grown up.
Oh, geez, what happened to the eggs? There were 2 dozen eggs in the fridge last night. Now there aren't any.
Cold cereal again.
Do anything with them?
No one's blaming you, Francis.
I'm the one they always blame for everything.
That's because you have so much pent-up aggression.
I do
not! You two, we're not talking about aggression right now. That's what family time is for. Now we are simply trying to determine what has happened to the eggs.
It's 4:23 a.m.
The clocks say 7:23.
The clocks are wrong.
I told you. It was the end of the world.
Bert drops a bag of garbage on the table in front of Francis. Later, Francis resets her clock.
It was hard to get back to sleep. I kept wondering why all the clocks had been sped up. But I knew there had to be a logical explanation.
Francis lies back in her bed, her eyes staring thoughtfully. Meanwhile, outside, a creature with monstrous clawed hands and feet stands on a shingled roof. He tears open a bag of dog treats with his claws, spilling dozens of bone-shaped cookies. In the yard below, a small white dog watches. The creature dangles a treat on a piece of string in front of the dog.
That's it. Come here. Come here.
The next morning, Bert rides past a dark-haired girl on his bike.
Most kids my age go to middle school, but I skipped a grade.
Hi, Bert.
You shouldn't waste a lot of time growing up. Joe.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
So, why don't you want to take the bus to school?
Joanne, nobody rides the bus to high school. It's just for children.
I wish I could skip a grade so I could go to high school. Bert does have another year after this, doesn't he?
If he's lucky. Well, why do you care when Bert graduates?
Did I tell you that our alarm clocks went off 3 hours early this morning.
Really?
Yeah. And Mom says the neighbor's clocks were wrong, too. Can you believe that?
Well, yeah, our clocks did the exact same thing. They were all 3 hours early.
It's so weird.
Well, it's only weird because you don't have a logical explanation for it.
Why is that dog on the roof?
A golden retriever sits on the roof of a nearby house while another dog stands on a roof one house over.
Now, that's weird.
Joe shrugs and they continue on. Later, they approach the high school as a teacher gets out of his classic car.
Maybe it was some kind of magnetic disturbance. You know, like a power surge.
Why would that make dogs get on the roof?
I was talking about the clocks being wrong.
Oh.
Good morning, Francis.
Good morning, Mr. Kepler. It's my biology teacher. He really likes me.
Does he make you cut up frogs and stuff? That is so gross.
Oh, I love biology. See, yesterday, we got to take this chicken embryo.
Frances pauses as she spots a teen boy with sunglasses lounging on a rock. He removes his glasses and smiles at her. She turns to Joe.
Why is that guy staring at us?
Joe looks over at the rocks that are now empty.
What guy?
Frances turns back toward the garden and decorative rocks to find the boy gone.
Well, he was just right there.
Okay, Francis. I gotta get going, but I'll see you here after school, okay?
Okay.
Joe leaves. Francis spots Mr. Kepler admiring his car.
Gorgeous.
He heads toward the school. Frances moves to enter the building, a confused frown on her face. As she approaches the doors, the same strange boy sits on the arch above. Frances looks about, but doesn't notice the boy as he peers down at her. She shrugs and heads inside. Later in biology class,
the egg, or ovum, may be surrounded by as many as 3 protective membranes. Ha!
Ha! Outside, eggs rain down on Mr. Kepler's car, splattering the open convertible in yolk and eggshells. The strange boy, still perched on the school entrance, glances up in bewilderment as he looks for the source of the eggs. As the eggs continue to rain down on the car, the boy jumps up from his perch. Jogging across the school roof, the boy discovers dozens of empty egg cartons. He peers over the edge of the roof down to the pavement below where Mr. Kepler's car sits covered in broken eggs. Back in the classroom.
That's the wonder of the egg. Now,
Francis whispers to a classmate.
Yeah, he did.
You have a question, Francis?
The teacher gazes at her expectantly.
Actually, I do, Mr. Kepler. Did your alarm clock go off 3 hours early this morning?
A puzzled look crosses his face.
How could you know that?
Oh, a lot of clocks were wrong. And, see, I've been taking a statistically accurate sampling of the whole school, getting names and addresses and phone numbers, you know, to see if it only happened in one area.
May I see that, please?
He holds out his hand.
Oh, yeah.
He takes the notes. A taxidermied bird in a display behind Frances moves its wings. She turns to look at it, but it keeps still. As she looks away, a model skeleton turns to stare at her. Frances spots the strange boy partly hidden behind a human anatomy dummy. She stares at him, her mouth agape. The teacher follows her gaze but only sees the dummy. He turns back to Frances with a curious expression. Later, students mill about outside the school and start to gather around Kepler's car. As the teacher approaches, his brow furrows as he takes in the poor state of his vandalized convertible. He picks up an eggshell.
Who did this?
He looks about and finds Francis standing behind him staring at the car in shock.
Do you know anything about this, Francis?
She shakes her head. Later, the strange boy sits beside a dog on the roof of a house. They both wear sunglasses. The boy gazes down at Frances as she walks home with Joe.
He was in your science class?
Not really in a class, just sort of sitting on a shelf.
He was what?
Oh, look, there's another one.
Get up there in the first place, Charlie.
That is so weird.
An owner tries to get his dog off his roof.
Oh, what if the helicopter flew over so low that the dog stuck with the car and chased it right up the roof?
That's a logical explanation, isn't it?
Sure, Joe.
Bert rides past them.
Hi, Bert.
Have you got a crush on Bert?
No.
Yes, you do!
No, I don't. Well, he is kind of cute.
Oh, you should see his room. If you think dissecting a frog's gross...
I think it's
gross...
really brave what he did for your little brother.
All he had to do was lie there.
But I hear it really hurts when they stick those needles in you. Must be really great to save someone's life.
It was the doctors who saved Arwen's life.
Well, you better not tell Bert anything about me thinking he's cute.
You're right. Like, I'm gonna say anything to Bert about anything.
Promise?
I promise.
Cross your heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in your eye.
Grow up, Joanne.
Look, I gotta get to swimming practice, but I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
Oh, are you trying out for the high school team?
They're all older than I am.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It's swimming. That just means you're more streamlined. Bye.
Bye.
Joe continues on down the sidewalk as Frances starts up the drive to her house. Sensing something, she pauses. Glancing behind her, she spots the strange boy across the street. As he slowly walks towards her, Frances grins.
Are you following me?
He looks back.
Yeah, I'm talking to you.
He turns around, pointing at himself in confusion.
You can see me?
Well, yeah.
A school bus drives by on the road between them, obscuring him from view. Once it passes, Frances sees that the strange boy has once again disappeared.
Strange things were happening that day all over Middleburg.
At the school pool, a swimmer dives into the water.
Someone put a little gelatin in the school swimming pool.
The swimmer's legs stick up from the pool of red gelatin. A coach grabs a rescue pole.
Come on, I'll get you out. Now, grab onto this.
In a school hallway,
a colony of bees colonized the principal's office.
A cloud of bees pours out of the office, swarming around the principal and his assistant. Outside,
school buses developed unexplained leaks.
A driver opens the door to his bus. Water bursts out from within, knocking him off his feet.
And then there was the graffiti.
All over town, the letter B appears on various surfaces, including building walls, an old woman's purse, and on the soles of several people's shoes.
Nobody knew who was responsible. Nobody knew who to blame.
Now, Kepler pulls into his driveway and exits his egg-covered car. Walking toward his house, he attempts to dust off the eggshells that cover the seat of his pants.
Nanook.
He looks for his dog, Nanook, who leaps off the roof, landing on top of Kepler. Nanook jumps off of him and licks his face. Later that night at the McCausland house, Frances lies sleeping in her bed.
But they wanted to blame somebody.
As she frowns in her sleep, the golden-haired doll once again turns its head to look at her. Meanwhile, just outside her house, the long shadow of the clawed creature creeps across her driveway. The creature steps swiftly across the drive to the McCausland's front lawn. He wiggles his feet as his claws poke out of his ill-fitting shoes. He drops a pallet of yellow flowers on the ground. Using a trowel, he digs into the yard. Inside, Frances startles awake. The next morning, Frances descends a set of stairs to the main floor. As she passes a bust of a Roman emperor's head, the head turns to watch her go. Sensing something, Frances pauses and glances back at the bust that now faces forward. She turns and enters the kitchen.
Why you always gotta blame me for everything?
It's called inductive logic.
Look, if you want everybody to know you skipped a grade, why don't you just wear a sign?
Bert?
She's the one that started it.
No one's blaming anyone, Bert, for anything.
Of course not. It's just that studies of various cultures show that pranks like these are usually the work of adolescents.
You know, I remember when I was 15.
She rolled a yard with toilet paper.
We were just discussing whether any of the kids at school are talking about anything. You know, like setting the clocks forward or putting something in the water at the pool.
Mr. McCausland opens a cupboard.
What happened to all of the gelatin? I was going to make my wiggly fruit thing for dinner tonight.
Well, I didn't take it.
Well, no one's saying you did, Bert.
Well, if it's not in the cabinet, then somebody had to take it. It's only a logical conclusion.
Bert, Darwin, and their parents turn to stare thoughtfully at Francis.
Parents are always ready to believe you've done something bad.
What?
It's like they never forget they had to change your diapers.
Later outside.
But at least your friends have more faith in you.
Hi, Joe.
How could you do this?
Joe gestures to the lawn.
Joe loves Bert. You promised.
Flower spell, Joe hearts Bert.
Joe, I didn't do this.
Get real, Francis.
Joe marches away in a huff.
Joe!
Joanne!
Get it!
Francis goes to follow, but Joe runs off. Behind Francis, the McCausland's mailbox, which sports the face of a pig, turns toward her. The door flap of the box yawns open like a mouth. Francis glances behind her, but the mailbox is back in its original position. She glares at it with suspicion. Turning back around, she pouts before heading toward school.
If I thought it was strange at home, school was even stranger.
As Francis walks onto the grounds of the school, she notices dozens of students and teachers standing seemingly frozen in time. Her mouth agape in confusion, Francis walks through the still figures. As the bell rings, all the previously frozen individuals come to life, continuing on their way toward school. On a nearby rooftop, the clawed creature watches, drumming his fingers along the building's ledge before retreating. Moments later, Francis enters the high school and climbs a set of stairs. Students roam the halls as Francis passes by a statue of the school's mascot, a tiger. Her brow furrows as she takes in the rows of lockers that all have been marked with the letter B. As she moves down the hall, the other students stare at her and speak to each other in hushed tones. A few students linger by Francis's untouched locker.
I'm telling you, she's the one that did it.
Is there something interesting about my locker?
Why is yours the only one without a B on it? Maybe she's the one who did it.
Grow up, people. Just because they skipped my locker, it doesn't mean I didn't do it.
Francis opens her locker, revealing a B painted on the inside. The sound of the bell startles Francis. The female student glances at the bee inside her locker with a pointed look. Francis closes the locker and brushes past the other students. Meanwhile, the eyes of the tiger statue glow an eerie purple. Later in the cafeteria, a male student approaches Francis.
Hey, did you really egg creepy Kepler's car?
I told you that.
That's what everybody says. They said you did the lockers too. I think it's really cool.
It's not cool, it's vandalism.
What does the bee stand for?
You know, I did not put a bee in all the lockers.
Well, who did then?
Across the cafeteria, Francis spots the strange boy watching her through a pair of binoculars. She glares at him and he smiles and waves.
Find out.
She leaves her lunch tray on a nearby table and approaches the strange boy. He stands up on one of the tables.
Aren't you gonna run away this time?
I didn't really run away.
Yes, you did.
I just needed some space to reevaluate the situation. I didn't know you could see me.
Why wouldn't I be able to see you?
He gestures to the room.
Nobody else can?
Yeah, right.
All right.
He jumps off the table and dances loudly in front of a passing student who doesn't seem to notice. Snagging some food from his tray, he returns to Francis.
Well, that's stealing, you know.
Well, he knows he shouldn't eat this stuff. It makes his face break out.
Well, what's your name anyway?
Houdini. Larry.
Oh, yeah. I guess you were almost named after Harry Houdini.
That's really funny. It's better than being named after Francis Bacon. I don't like bacon.
Well, Houdini is not even a real name.
I'm not a real person.
He bows.
An imaginary friend. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's really cute, but I do not have an imaginary friend.
Did I say I was your imaginary friend? I don't think so, Miss Francis.
Well, if you're not my friend, then why are you following me around?
Are you sure I'm following you? Maybe you're just imagining it.
Francis huffs, turning to leave, but Larry follows her.
No.
Seriously, Fran, do you mind if I call you Fran?
Yeah, actually, I do.
I think I must have been sent here to help you. That's probably why you can see me.
Oh, you know, I don't need any help, real or imaginary.
He puts on a detective cap.
Oh, contraire.
There's something very peculiar going down in this burg, Watson, and it looks to me like you're in the middle of it.
Look, I don't care what they said, but I did not egg Mr. Kepler's car.
I know you didn't.
Okay.
I know who did.
He leans in close to her.
It was the boogeyman.
The boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's got it in for you, Fran. I think you're being framed.
Larry holds a picture frame to his face. Shaking her head in disbelief, Frances stands up on a nearby table.
Excuse me. I'm really sorry. Does anybody know who this guy is?
What are you
Honestly,
talking about?
He says his name is Larry Houdini. Does anybody know?
She turns to Larry, who has disappeared. She looks about the cafeteria for Larry, but doesn't see him.
Francis McCausland, to the office, please. Francis McCausland, to the office.
Francis steps down and leaves. Later, she sits with the guidance counselor across from the principal and Kepler.
I see your middle name is Bacon. That is Bacon with a B, correct?
Is there a Bacon without a B?
Francis, it has been suggested that you might know something about the unusual events that have been happening the past few days. We have reason to believe that there was a plan among a large number of students to set clocks to the wrong time as a sort of mass prank.
You had that list of students you were checking with to make sure they set their clocks forward.
What?
Back. You set them back in order to make the alarms go off earlier.
You set them forward. It's like daylight savings time. Fall back, spring forward.
No, fall forward, spring back.
Can we forget about the clocks for a moment?
Spring forward.
Francis, do you have any knowledge about Mr. Kepler's car being vandalized?
No.
Or about the graffiti on the lockers?
No.
Don't forget the gelatin in the swimming pool.
No!
How do you feel, Francis, about all these things? Do you have any insights?
The guidance counselor looks at her expectantly.
Yes. Yes, actually, I do. There's this boy, and he's been following me around. Well, and he's really weird. He said his name was Larry Houdini.
The three adults exchange skeptical looks.
Well, he said a lot of silly things.
Did he say he knew who was behind the pranks?
Well, actually...
Larry appears dressed in hockey gear.
Well, there he is. He's right there.
She jumps out of her seat and runs toward him.
Right here, you! Francis
almost knocks over a secretary as she chases Larry out into the hallway. The three adults follow her. Gliding through the hallway on a pair of skates, Larry goes unnoticed as he passes the other students. Francis pushes aside a couple as she continues chasing Larry down the hall and around a corner.
Quick, in here!
Turning into an empty hallway, she sees Larry enter the music room. She follows him inside.
Get in the bass drum. As a hiding place, you can't beat it.
I'm not trying to hide. I'm chasing you.
Fran. You're making a big mistake, Fran. If I was really sent here to help you.
Yeah, who sent you?
Do you ever hear a little voice inside your head telling you you should do something?
Actually, no.
Well, I did. And he told me to come to beautiful downtown Middleburg.
What you heard was just dissociation between the two sides of your alleged brain.
No. It's the same guy that sings those stupid songs you can't get out of your head.
No, that's Barry Manilow.
Francis!
In here! He's in here!
So you get out of this one, Houdini.
Fran.
The three adults enter.
There he is, Larry Houdini!
As she gestures to the now empty classroom, the principal and the other adults look about in confusion.
I think this joke has gone on long enough, Francis.
What are you talking about? He's right here. He's playing a saxophone. He's moonwalking.
The three adults exchange concerned looks.
I'm going to have to call your parents.
Why are you doing this to me? Why are you pretending that you can't...
She looks back and Larry is gone.
See him.
Would you like to lie down, Francis?
Larry, now in a marching band uniform, bangs a drum as he exits the room. Francis chases after him, followed by the adults. As they exit the room, they find the hallway quiet and empty. Later, Frances lies down on a bench outside the principal's office. Inside, her mother meets with the principal and guidance counselor.
Would you say that Frances is unusually rebellious?
Oh, no, not at all. Frances has always been very mature for her age. Very, very well-adjusted. Very grown up.
Starting high school can be traumatic. Especially if she skipped a grade.
I understand that her younger brother had leukemia. And it says here that he was given bone marrow transplants from his sibling.
Well, yes, that's true. But Darwin is in remission. The doctors say there's every hope for a complete cure.
Oh, I've been developing a theory that Frances is acting out repressed anger at having to donate her bone marrow to save her brother.
Well, that's interesting. However, it was our elder son, Bert, Albert, who was the donor. So,
well, it was just a theory.
In the hallway, Frances rests her head on a stuffed toy tiger with a folded cloth over her eyes. The lights dim and an eerie purple fog rolls in across the floor. Sitting on top of a bookshelf, another stuffed tiger turns its head toward her. The creature's long fingers cast a shadow on the bench. The clawed fingers curl around the back of the bench, then reach out over Frances's face. Frances rests unaware with the cloth over her eyes.
Can Granny come out to play?
Startled, Frances throws off the cloth and sits up. As she looks around, her mother touches her shoulder and she jumps.
Frances! How do you feel, Frances?
Okay, I guess.
Oh, I am sure that there's a logical explanation for everything that's been going on. I know that you are far too mature to be playing childish pranks on people.
And you still think it was this boy, Larry, who put the gelatin in the swimming pool and threw the eggs on Mr. Kepler's car?
Eggs?
Later in the McCausland's driveway.
I'm sure it is all simply a misunderstanding, honey. But Frances, I was just thinking about something Ms. Riedel said, you know, about repressed anger.
Oh, Mom, no.
Is there anything your father and I could possibly
do? Please, let's not get Freudian, okay? This is not some kind of adolescent thing.
Well, honey.
She gestures to the message on the lawn.
I didn't do it!
Later, Mr. McCausland cleans up the living room.
She ran into her room like she was still just a little child. Oh, what if she's not emotionally mature enough to start high school?
Oh, come on. We have thought all the way through this.
I know, but what if we made a mistake? Well, maybe she's unhappy, Michael. Maybe she's blaming us.
Oh, so you think our daughter's expressing her resentment towards us by writing the letter B all through the town?
Let's be the adults here, Michael, shall we? You know, I mean, obviously, she's not doing everything alone.
Well, obviously.
But if she is unhappy, that could make her vulnerable. And maybe she got involved in some kind of,
Michael spins the blades of the ceiling fan and dusts them. His wife looks at the spinning blades thoughtfully.
Mind control. You know, she mentioned being hypnotized in the car on the way home. And there are incidences of mass hypnosis that have occurred all over the world. What if someone is controlling the minds of children all over Middleburg, telling them to egg cars and set clocks
back? So you're saying that someone is coming into this house to control our children's minds. How could they do that?
Bert enters and turns on the TV.
We are having an important discussion here, Bert.
About Frances.
What, you guys think she's the one doing all that stuff? That's what everybody at school says. She's supposed to be like the ringleader or something.
In her bedroom, Frances turns away from her computer.
It's gotta be mass hypnosis. It's the only possible explanation.
She stands and paces across the room. Glancing down, she notices a clump of scattered yellow petals on the floor by her bed. Crawling onto her hands and knees, she pulls a shoe out from under the bed that has more petals stuck to the bottom.
Darwin?
Are you sure there isn't really a boogeyman?
What?
Some kids at the park said there is. But if you pull your covers over your head at night, the boogeyman can't get you.
Darwin, the boogeyman is just something that somebody made up to scare children. You know, somebody older and wiser needs to tell those kids the truth.
It was a big boy who told them about the boogeyman.
Well, he should be ashamed for scaring children like that.
They said his name was Larry.
A curious look crosses Francis's face.
Hey, Darwin. What did he look like? The guy who told them about the boogeyman.
I don't know. He said he's playing basketball. But I couldn't see him.
As Darwin leaves, Frances's eyes go wide. She gets up and leaves the room as well, passing a full-length mirror. A pair of clawed hands reach out through it. Later, at a basketball court, Frances approaches Larry, who plays alone in a karate gi. He shoots and misses.
You missed the shot?
He turns to her.
What are you, the referee?
Game's over, Larry Houdini.
Are you mad about something?
Yeah, actually, I'm furious. You had me thinking I was seeing things or something. Or telling me you're some kind of imaginary person.
Friend. Get it right.
And all you really did was just hypnotize the principal and Miss Riddle to make them think that they couldn't see you.
What?
Yeah.
Girl, I don't know how to hypnotize people. I can do magic tricks.
Putting on a top hat, he transforms the basketball into a bouquet of flowers.
There you go, friend.
You know, if you're not for real, then why could the kids in the park see you?
Those were little kids, Fran. They could see anything they want. Just like I see these monkey bars.
He runs over to the jungle gym and starts climbing all over it.
You know, I want you to tell my parents and the principal and Miss Riddle. Are you listening to me? Larry!
They can't see me, Fran, okay?
He goes back to playing and she frowns angrily.
Are you the one who's been causing all the weird stuff happening around here? Yeah, like the graffiti and the vandalism and the dogs. Why are you doing this to me?
I told you. The guy in my head, he sent me here. You don't listen.
I get it. You're trying to get me into trouble. You're trying to blame everything on me. What?
Can you hear?
No, I don't hear voices!
A passing woman with a baby stroller gives Francis a look.
I just see things.
Have you seen this one yet?
Larry grips the edge of the monkey bars.
Check it out, friend. Pretty cool, huh?
Seemingly walking on air, Larry floats upward until he's standing on his hands on top of the monkey bars.
Do you have a library card?
She stares at him.
What?
Later at the library...
Snatched up his sword, ready and eager for the
rest. Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Larry tickles a few small children in greeting.
How's that lizard?
Francis trails in behind him, watching the exchange. On a television screen, a woman reads from a book. Larry starts to look through the bookshelves.
Which book?
You know, there is such a thing as a card catalog.
A librarian shushes Francis, who mouths the word sorry as Larry continues his search.
You look up the title of the book you want?
I don't know what book I want. The guy in my head just said I needed a book. He didn't say which one.
Shh, the librarian.
Why is it so bright in here?
Some people, they like to read in here. Go figure.
He puts on sunglasses.
What's with your eyes? Okay, it's not that bright in here.
Eureka!
He startles both Francis and the children.
Librarian is going to throw us out if you don't be quiet.
He picks up a large leather-bound book.
Le livre de boogie.
The boogie book?
She stands beside Larry as he opens the book. Several dark moths fly out of it. Larry points to the author's name.
By who?
By guy in head.
Now, if this is supposed to convince me that you're for real...
You mean not for real? Read the dedication.
Francis sighs and reads the dedication.
This book is dedicated to...
She points to the name printed in the book, Larry.
Larry.
For Larry. Okay. So let's see what the head honcho has to say. Head honcho?
No, this doesn't prove anything.
The librarian glares at Francis.
There
are places where you can have a phony book printed.
Do you believe?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
If you believe, then clap your hands.
The kids clap.
Oh, Tinkerbell, clap your hands as hard as you can.
Shh.
That's good.
They stop.
Quiet! Sound of millions of little hands.
Larry closes the book and glares at the librarian.
Hold my book.
Handing the book to Francis, he removes his sunglasses and marches over to the Storytime television.
Hey, how you doing?
He pops out from behind the TV and makes silly faces for the kids. With a flick of his fingers, he turns the video off. He disappears behind the TV, only to reappear on top of the table the children sit at.
If you're Larry Ann, you know it, clap your hands. Imaginary Ann, you know it, clap your hands.
If the boogeyman is stuck,
then just ask help from Larry. If you need me, Ann, you know it, clap your hands.
Larry stands and backflips over and over down the long line of tables. He springs off the edge and lands in front of the librarian's desk. Larry makes faces at the librarian, who doesn't appear to see him. Larry copies the librarian shushing. Removing the top of his gi, he reveals a set of overalls and puts on a train conductor's hat. Francis watches wide-eyed as the librarian follows him over to the kids. Larry sits on the table and spins a globe like a basketball.
Who turned off story time?
She turns the TV back on as Larry mockingly mouths what she says.
He did.
Do not touch the audiovisual equipment.
As she goes back to her desk, Larry points at the TV and appears on screen in a suit of armor. Francis, still clutching the book, moves to stand beside the TV.
So, who wants to hear the story about the boogeyman? Oh, I'm just getting scared just thinking about it. Oh, hey, Francis, how you doing? Anyway, the boogeyman's a very bad man. So, if he ever tries to come in your home at night, into your room, make sure you pull the covers over. That way, he can't get you.
Francis places the book on the librarian's desk.
I think I'd like to check this out.
Later, Larry and Francis walk along the sidewalk.
Oh, this is it, this is it, this is it. Chapter 2, 50 Ways to Bust Your Boogie.
You know, you could be an astronaut from a galaxy far, far away, and you've got this neural thing in your head that keeps people from seeing.
He high-fives a kid.
Yeah, although it doesn't work on really small children. You know, what if that voice in your head, what if it's some kind of transmission from a mothership?
Man, if we had a thermonuclear device, that boogeyman would be toast.
You know, what if the boogeyman was really a creature from a distant planet?
It comes from under your bed.
What?
Yeah, it says it right here. The boogeyman lives under your bed. It doesn't say which bed, but I figure if he's trying to ruin your life, it must be under your bed.
Well, there is nothing living under my bed.
Oh, yeah, Francis?
Yeah.
Have you looked lately?
He looks at her expectantly. Francis frowns, her mouth agape.
Well, let's just go look right now.
Alrighty then.
Okay.
She starts to head home.
Well, are you coming or...
She turns around to find Larry has suddenly disappeared.
What?
Back at her house, Francis turns a corner to find her parents waiting for her at the top of the stairs.
Where have you been, Francis?
I just went to the library.
You know you're not supposed to go out without telling us first.
Okay, I'm sorry. I guess I forgot.
It's all right, Francis. We're not angry. We're just very worried about you.
Can I go to my room now?
Actually, we need to talk, Francis.
Yes, you may go. But just keep us informed next time, okay?
Okay.
Francis leaves.
Don't you want to know what's going on with her?
Well, of course I do. But we can't pressure her, Michael. She needs her space.
She needs professional help. I am going to email that guidance counselor, Ms. Riedel.
Oh.
I'm going to invite her over to dinner tomorrow. Oh. She has experience dealing with problems like this. Besides, I have that roast I need to cook.
Michael heads towards the kitchen as his wife glances up toward Francis's room with a troubled look on her face. Meanwhile, Francis stops just inside her room and stares at her large bed against the far wall. She closes the door behind her. Her lips quirk to the side curiously as she approaches the bed. The golden-haired doll on her dresser turns its head to follow Frances's movements. Cautiously, Frances steps up beside the bed and slowly kneels on the floor. Unnoticed by Frances, the doll continues to watch her. With a quick jerk of the covers, Frances lifts the edge of the blanket and looks under the bed. A hand reaches from above and touches her shoulder. Larry wears a turban.
Larry!
He's not under there.
Now.
He lounges on the bed with the book.
Okay, it says here there's this thing called temperature fuse that can make a boogeyman harmless.
You've got your feet on my bed.
He lifts his feet.
Oh, man, I think I can make one of these temperature fuse things.
Where do you get your clothes?
Well, hey, Fran, it's got the instructions and everything. Look at this.
Darwin enters.
Have you lost your marbles?
Darwin!
Larry kneels before him.
They're not on the floor. They're not Bert's.
Hey, man, don't you recognize me?
How do you know Darwin?
He said they weren't his.
It's me. Larry?
Are they yours?
Do you see anybody else in here?
You don't have to be snotty about it. I don't throw the marbles anyway.
Darwin drops the marbles and goes.
Oh, no, wait, don't leave, Darwin. Darwin, why won't you be my friend anymore?
Darwin leaves, seemingly unable to see Larry.
You're Darwin's imaginary friend?
I didn't know that was your brother. Darwin, pull the covers over your head so you'll be safe, okay? He doesn't even know I exist.
Well, he doesn't believe in things like imaginary friends. I can't believe I'm having this conversation. You're not really an imaginary friend.
I don't understand why he doesn't believe in me anymore.
Oh, well, look, I told him a long time ago that it was childish to believe in things like that.
Larry glares up at Frances, his eyes glowing an eerie purple and yellow.
You did it.
He points at her angrily.
You're the reason why he can't see me. You told Darwin to stop believing in me.
What's wrong with your eyes?
Larry presses his hands over his eyes.
I must be allergic to something. I don't know.
Allergies don't make your eyes look like that.
You know what, Fran? You just know everything, don't you? That's why you told Darwin to stop believing in me. To show him you knew more than he did.
No, he needs to believe in his doctors, okay? Something real?
Larry glares at her, his eyes back to normal.
That's how you stop being afraid. You grow up and face reality. I had to help him do that.
You wanted to help him? Then why didn't you give him some of your bone marrow, huh?
I wanted to help him, but the doctor said Burr was the only one who could do it.
I bet that was a relief.
No, I wanted to do it.
Safe!
Larry!
No, don't pretend with me, Fran. I know all about pretending.
He tosses the catcher's mask on the floor as he exits her room. Frances chases after him. As Frances looks down the staircase, she sees that Larry has disappeared. Sniffling back tears, she heads back into her room. Later that night, the McCausland house sits dark save for a light in one of the second floor windows, which goes out. Inside Darwin's room, the young boy lies sound asleep on his bed. The shadow of a figure in a cowboy hat moves across the wall. It's Larry. He approaches Darwin's bedside and sits on the edge of the bed. He smiles down at the sleeping boy, his eyes glowing an eerie yellow. Meanwhile, as Frances sleeps, a purple light and rolling fog erupt from under her bed. The golden-haired doll watches as Frances frowns and grimaces in her sleep. The fog creeps across the floor and pours out through her open window. The light coming from under Frances's bed grows brighter for a moment as the last of the fog escapes out the window. Back in Darwin's room, Larry raises his hand and reaches out to Darwin, but pauses with his hand hovering over the boy's head. Larry turns his gaze upward, following the sounds coming from the roof. With a concerned look, Larry pulls the covers up over Darwin's head. A cowboy doll that looks like Larry sits on the nightstand. Now Larry, dressed as a firefighter, shakes Frances awake.
Fran, the boogeyman is on the roof.
Frances rushes outside.
A fireman now? You remind me of Darwin's action figures.
She looks at the roof.
Yeah, I don't see anybody. Well, there's Christmas lights. But there is no boogeyman on the roof, okay?
I think you're making the whole thing up.
A string of Christmas lights falls and quickly rises back up.
Hold this for me. I'm going up.
Wait. What are you going to do?
I don't know. Okay, I don't know. I guess I'll use my imagination.
Try using a ladder, okay? There's one in the garage. Larry?
She looks back. Larry is gone.
Larry?
Clutching the boogie book, Frances gazes up to the roof where Larry now perches beside a window.
Larry? Larry?
Larry points to the other side of the roof while mouthing the word boogeyman. Rising from his perch, Larry climbs toward the other side of the roof.
Larry? Larry?
Larry sneaks onto the upper level of the roof where the clawed creature crouches over a box of Christmas lights. The creature has spread the lights all over the roof, blanketing the house in them. Meanwhile, Frances enters the garage. She puts down the book and retrieves an extendable ladder. Back on the roof, as Larry creeps closer to the creature, he accidentally steps on one of the light bulbs. The creature stands up in a tattered coat, revealing his sharp teeth and pale yellow eyes. The boogeyman throws an extension cord which wraps around Larry's leg. Yanking the cord, he pulls Larry off his feet. Larry tumbles down the roof, just managing to grab onto the edge before falling. The boogeyman stalks towards him.
It's nice of you to hang around, but you'd be safer on the ground. Oh, it's kind of scary. Don't you think so?
Larry.
Do you see a friend?
Randy.
Frances approaches with the ladder.
It won't be long until she can see a boogie just like me.
Larry!
Do you see a friend? Do you see him?
Frances struggles to lift the ladder up towards him.
And you'll see that new boogie too. Inside of the mirror. It's you.
He holds up a mirror showing Larry how his eyes have turned yellow. Just as Frances lifts the ladder, Larry falls. Gripping a string of lights, Larry pulls down a large Santa decoration, which hits Frances. She drops the ladder, and the top of it crashes through her parents' bedroom window, waking them. Meanwhile, all the lights go out around town in a sweeping blackout.
Look around, and you will see that blackout starts with B.
At the McCausland's, all the Christmas lights covering the house turn on. Frances's parents exit the house.
What's with the lights?
They spot Frances beside the ladder.
Frances!
Her parents look at her and the lights in shock and confusion.
Please. What?
She stands there, speechless. The next morning, Michael picks up a newspaper from the lawn. The headline reads, Prankster's Light Display Suspect.
Hey, Mike, what's up with this?
There he is! Mr. McCullough!
Several news reporters and camera crews swarm him.
Why was your house the only one with power in the city?
Make a statement, sir!
Michael runs inside the house, slamming the door behind him.
Is this a political statement?
Inside, he holds up the paper to his wife.
We need to talk about this.
Could we not discuss current events this morning, Michael?
I am talking about this!
What?
This is our house on the front page of the paper. We've got TV reporters outside right now!
Oh, cool.
Bert runs to the window.
Hello.
Frances, you know we are not trying
That's
to pressure you, but even you must admit that you have not adequately explained what you were doing with that letter last night. Frances.
This has nothing to do with the public right to know.
Frances, are we communicating?
Nope.
What, Mom?
The chick from Channel 15 News is out there. Oh, she's a hottie.
If you want to know about our family, visit our website.
Michael hangs up the phone.
Maybe we ought to get away from the house. Why don't we take a family drive?
Oh, gee, I would love that. Oh, but I've got this elective dental surgery.
Listen, Bert.
And I don't feel good. Can I stay home, too?
After what you were up to last night, young lady.
Just? Michael.
As his wife gives him a pleading look, Michael drinks a glass of juice to calm himself. He glares down at Frances, who smiles apologetically. Later, Frances sits alone on the front porch as the rest of her family drive off in a sedan. Frances goes to the garage where Larry tosses her an alarm clock.
Time flies.
Nice catch.
You're all right.
Just all right? And I thought I was great.
Well, when you fell off the roof last night, I thought that you were get real, Frances.
If I can quote your friend Joanne. Well, former friend, thanks to the boogeyman. Are you sure you didn't do anything to make him mad?
Hello. I think I'd remember if I'd ever done anything to the boogeyman.
Okay, Frances. Okay.
He closes the garage door.
Well, are you saying because you're imaginary that you can't ever die?
I never have.
Well, so what? You never get old? You just stay young forever, like Peter Pan?
Our friends grow up. Then, they don't need us anymore. So we go find new friends. Making new friends keeps you young, just like aerobics, tabo, tai chi, all that good stuff.
Well, then why didn't you get a new friend when Darwin stopped believing in you?
Larry pauses his jumping jacks.
Because Darwin still needed me.
He glares, pointing angrily at her. She looks down, noticing an old blueprint and a bizarre contraption.
What is this thing, anyway?
Temptrifuge.
Oh. How does it work? Assuming it works.
Oh, it's so simple, a child could understand it. In fact, a grown-up couldn't understand it at all. All right, if you spin the clockwise at the right RPM, it creates what you call a temporal fugitation impulse. You take the fugitation impulse and you amplify it with these magnetic fields, and then the speaker sends it through the vacuum chamber.
Well, that's Dad's vacuum cleaner.
She turns a knob on the machine.
Your dad does the vacuuming?
Yeah, he likes to do the housework.
This is starting to get unbelievable.
Anyways, after resonating the vacuum chamber, the impulses go through these jumper cables and right into the boogeyman.
And?
A boogeyman's got a very tightly wound biological clock. That's why they only bother you when you're a little kid. By the time you grow up, the boogeyman is tied and retired.
No. Then why is he bothering me now?
Larry turns to Frances, his brow furrowed in a thoughtful expression.
That's a very good question, Fran.
He rubs his chin.
Anywho, the temptrifuge speeds it up. 30 seconds on this baby. He's got a white long beard, walking with a cane, eating some prunes. He's harmless. Too old to boogie.
And you expect me to believe all this?
It's in the book. What do you want, a demonstration?
Yeah.
Everything goes black and white.
Say that. It's too experimental.
I would have said ridiculous.
Larry takes the jumper cables and attaches them to a carton of milk.
I'm going to pull the switch.
Putting on a protective visor, Larry switches on the temperfuge.
Yeah, I said I was crazy at the university.
Sparks fly off the jumper cables.
It's alive. But now I've chosen. Now they'll see.
The milk carton bulges and expands, then explodes, spraying white chunks over Frances and Larry. Color returns to the scene as Larry laughs.
It's not funny.
Sorry.
She tries to wipe it off.
You know, this stuff smells disgusting.
It's sour. Been fugitated. It's like 2 months old now. I don't know why I went bluey like that.
He cleans her with a towel.
Ow! Gosh, you scratched me. Give me that.
She takes the towel, revealing Larry's hand that now has long, sharp claws. He hides it behind his back.
I used to bite them. Mm-hmm. So that's why they grow really fast now.
Man, there's something strange going on with you.
Like, how would you know? Have you known any other imaginary people? I could be perfectly normal.
Yeah, right. And pigs could fly. Look, I'm gonna go take a cold shower. You know, maybe that'll wake me up from this nightmare.
She passes him back the towel and stomps off. As she leaves, Larry stares down at his clawed right hand. He gapes as the nails on his left hand grow into a matching set of sharp claws. Walking over to the workbench, Larry picks up a pair of gardening shears and moves to cut off his new talons. In the bathroom, Frances wears a bathrobe and checks her face in the mirror. Larry appears behind her in a snorkel and diving suit.
Oh, is that a zit? Girl, you need to take care of your skin.
She turns around to face him, but again he has disappeared.
Great. I'm still dreaming.
Over here.
She looks back and sees him dancing in the mirror's reflection.
What are you doing in there?
Just pausing to reflect.
She frowns as he continues to dance.
Get out! Okay, get out! It's creepy!
Inside the mirror, he walks towards her, then climbs out one flipper-covered foot at a time. She gapes at him as he hops off the counter.
Oh. How long have you been in there?
I was just thinking. Now that the boogeyman knows we're after him, he may not come out from under the bed for who knows how long. You know, lay low.
Why can't we just wait for him to come out? What's the hurry?
Oh, no, there's no hurry. I just thought it'd be nice to get it over with, you know, before something bad happens.
Bad?
I mean, if it does.
Larry files his nails.
So how do we get this over with?
Dropping the file, he pulls out the book.
It's all in the book. Okay. There's this recipe called boogie goo.
Boogie goo?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Boogeymen love this stuff. Mm. It's going to take me a while to get the ingredients, but...
Why don't you try the supermarket? Imaginary food section.
That is a good idea. Fran, you are so smart.
Later, Miss Riedel has dinner with the McCausland's.
That's a lovely little bust you have there.
Mrs. McCausland looks at the sculpted bust behind her.
Thank you. It's a reproduction, of course. You know, you don't get rich being a cultural anthropologist.
Oh, tell me about it. And what do you do, Michael?
I've got a PhD in solid waste engineering.
She looks at him, confused.
Piled higher and deeper.
It's so caring of you to invite me into your home environment and give Francis and I a chance to get to know each other.
Francis and me.
Can I be excused?
Ms. Riedel waves Francis away.
Yes, of course you may, Francis.
Francis heads towards the kitchen.
I'm going to go to my room environment.
Francis opens the kitchen door, finding Larry cooking something in a large pot. She closes the door behind her.
What are you doing?
She lifts the lid on a second pot.
Oh, it smells disgusting.
Boogie goo.
Boogie goo.
You need to clean this up before somebody comes in here and sees all this.
She gestures to the mess.
I think it's about done anyway.
What's in that?
Some rotten eggs, burnt sugar, jalapeno peppers, Limburger cheese, some anchovies, bacon grease. One of those guys?
He points at insects.
Your...
He pulls out metal nails.
Daily requirement of iron. A couple of slugs.
Some leftovers from the school cafeteria.
He adds them to the pot.
Oh, sick!
Yeah! Don't you hate leftovers? Oh, and, I needed some week-old sweat, so I ran one of Bert's chimp socks through the blender.
Well, you did wash it out when you were done, didn't you?
Say what?
You did wash it out!
Frances grimaces in disgust as she pulls a blending pitcher out of the sink. She gapes toward the dining room.
Pudding, Miss Riedel.
Oh, thank you. It looks delicious.
Excuse me, I think I smell something strange.
In the kitchen.
We can pour a trail of boogie goo and lead the boogeyman straight
to
the centrifuge.
Oh.
Mrs. McCausland enters the kitchen. A look of horror crosses her face as she closes the door.
Why and what in the world are you cooking?
It's, homework. For home ec.
You are not taking home ec.
That's why I'm cooking it at home. I think everyone should learn how to cook.
This does not smell like food, Francis.
Francis hides the boogie book.
You're right. I'm just gonna take it out.
Grabbing a pair of oven mitts, she tries to lift the pot, but it's too heavy. She tries again.
Okay. I think it is about time we started telling each other the truth, young lady.
Now, Mom?
Yes, now.
Francis,
you're... Father and I both know that something is going on with you and that you are involved somehow with what's going on in Middleburg.
Mom!
We don't want to punish you, Francis. Can we move? We just want to understand why you are doing it. I can't help but feel that your father and I are partially responsible. That maybe we forced you to grow up too fast.
In the dining room...
This has a very interesting flavor. Do I detect a hint of nutmeg?
Just a little bit.
Ms. Riedel chokes on the pudding. Reaching into her mouth, she pulls out a wad of fabric. Michael and Darwin look on in disgust.
That looks like Bert's gym sock.
Back in the kitchen.
I know what we went through with Darwin must have been very hard for you. We almost lost him, and that was very scary, even for the grown-ups. What kind of cookbook is this, honey? Because I'm just a little
girl.
Oh, now don't go, because we've got to start now. Okay, now just
Karen,
I'll be back.
Honey.
Just, gosh.
Karen, need a little help?
Karen leaves the kitchen. Francis looks about for Larry.
Larry.
Wide-eyed, Francis looks at the large pot.
Larry?
Francis lifts the lid of the large pot before quickly slamming it back down. After a moment, she opens it and looks inside.
What are you doing in there?
I got hungry.
Get out. Get out!
Gripping the inside of the pot, Larry slowly starts to pull himself out, now covered in purple boogie goo. Bending down, Frances opens the cupboard doors on the kitchen island below, but only sees more pots. Her jaw drops in disbelief. Larry stands up in the pot.
Can you help me?
Standing up straight, she gawks at him.
Can you help me?
She takes his hand, steadying him as he awkwardly climbs out of the pot. Jumping down from the island, Larry licks a large spoon covered in boogie goo.
How can you eat that stuff?
It kind of tastes like chicken with a hint of nutmeg.
What is going on with you, Larry? First your eyes, your fingernails. Now you're eating boogie goo.
Look, I'm not turning into a boogeyman, okay? You got that? Don't go there.
He throws down the spoon, splattering goo on the floor.
Don't go there, Francis.
He stomps off.
Larry.
She picks up the boogie book and follows him. In the dining room.
Just keep taking deep breaths, Ms. Riedel. Okay?
I'm going to get some anti-nausea medicine and a wastebasket.
Can I be excused? I hate to see people barf.
Darwin leaves as Karen fans the gagging Ms. Riedel. Darwin passes through the kitchen, stepping in the spilt boogie goo. Upstairs, Frances pauses by Darwin's open bedroom door. Peeking inside, she spots Larry kneeling at the foot of the bed, searching for something.
You are turning into a boogeyman, aren't you?
What makes you say that?
She enters with the book.
Where did boogeymen come from, Larry? Is it in the book?
She sits down on Darwin's bed and opens up the book, flipping through several pages. She spots a passage.
If a child stops believing in an imaginary friend too soon, the imaginary friend may turn into a boogeyman.
She gazes sadly at the still kneeling Larry.
That's what's happening too, isn't it? Because I made Darwin stop believing in you too soon. Larry, I'm trying to help you.
Just go away, okay? You can't help me.
Don't say I can't help, okay?
Darwin enters.
It's a terrible thing to say.
He looks around but can't see Larry.
Who are you talking to?
Darwin, I'm trying to have a private conversation here.
Does that mean you're talking to yourself?
Will you just please leave me alone for a little while?
It's my room.
Please.
Okay, then I get your room.
He leaves. Larry holds up a toy car.
Would you give this to Don for me? He's looking all over for it.
Maybe you could give it to him yourself. You know, maybe I could talk to Darwin and I could get him to believe in you again.
It's a little late for that, Fran.
Larry sits up, revealing his yellow and purple Larry. Eyes, sharp teeth, and claws. In Fran's room.
Oh, there you are. Mister, he's a dino. He can go on rides on his back.
Darwin plays on a bench at the end of her bed. A couple of dolls watch him.
Oh, he's really heavy.
With Larry.
Do you smell something?
Larry crawls across Darwin's floor, grinning maniacally as he follows the scent. In Francis's room. As Darwin continues to play, the purple light and fog emanate from under the bed. Something underneath spots Darwin's feet dangling from the bench. In Darwin's room...
Boogie goo!
Stop it, Larry, okay? That's disgusting!
Larry licks up some goo from the floor.
Boogie goo.
I think I must have spilled it on the kitchen floor. And you stepped in it.
I didn't step in any boogie goo, okay?
How did it get up here?
The two turn to each other with a look of realization.
Darwin.
Meanwhile, Darwin continues to play, unaware of the growing fog. Under the bed, the boogeyman creeps forward and grabs Darwin's ankle.
Darwin?
Frances rushes down the hall to her room.
Darwin?
Outside, a storm rages as Frances enters her room. There she finds Darwin's two toys and one of his shoes. She crouches down and peers under the bed, but finds nothing. Larry enters behind her.
Why are you breathing like that?
There's something in my... There's something in my throat.
She picks up Darwin's shoe.
It must be downstairs.
She hands it to Larry, who licks it.
Oh, that's awful!
What'd you expect?
The boogeyman licked this shoe! Wah!
Pausing on her way out of the room, she turns to Larry.
Are you telling me that the boogeyman's got Darwin?
It must be after his soul.
It's got boogie goo on it.
He points to the shoe.
I looked under the bed, and Darwin is not under there.
No. He's under there. You just can't see him. Fred, Darwin's in the boogie world now. I'm gonna go get my temptifuge, all right?
Boogie world? No.
Yes.
Now you have gone to...
Larry again disappears. Looking back inside her room, she sees Larry pushing his temptifuge under the bed.
Okay, you know, I refuse to believe in some invisible place called the boogie world.
Come on, Fran. You believe in the boogeyman, don't you?
I haven't seen him.
You didn't see him on the roof last night?
All I saw was you and a lot of blinky lights. Besides, it's hard to believe in something you can't see.
You mean like electricity?
Oh, come on.
Atoms, molecules, gravity.
He makes Darwin's shoe float in the air.
Okay. If there was a boogie world, how do we get into it?
We don't. This job is for a professional.
Look, I am not going to sit up here and do nothing, okay? You have no idea how hard it was when Darwin was sick and I couldn't do anything.
And
to
you
help
told him.
Him
he should stop believing in me. You were a big help then, Fran.
Why are you being so mean?
What do you expect? I'm turning into a boogeyman, okay? Okay, Frances?
Gritting his teeth, Larry turns away from her as he tries to regain control.
I'm going with you.
Fred, what if I boogie down the rest of the way while you're in there? You may get trapped in boogie world just like Darwin!
I'm not worried about what happens to me.
I am! Okay, I am!
Larry.
What?
What you said about me being relieved when I couldn't be a donor. It's true. I was glad I had to be Bert because I was scared.
Real people get scared, Fred. It's perfectly logical.
Frances watches mournfully as Larry crawls under the bed and disappears. With a slightly fearful expression, Frances kneels down beside her bed and takes a peek beneath it. She's startled by a bunny-faced doll staring up at her.
I hate that stupid thing.
Pulling it out of the way, she spots the extension cord for the temptrifuge disappearing into a small purple portal. She reaches out towards the portal and her hand brushes its surface, which ripples like water under her fingers. As she starts to push her hand through the portal, her father comes up behind her and touches her shoulder. She jerks back in alarm.
Please do not do that, Dad.
He sits on a chair in front of her.
Frances, did you put a gym sock in the blender?
Dad, I'm kind of in the middle of something right now.
But, well, it's just going to have to wait because I am not leaving here until I hear the truth about everything.
Was the boogeyman. Okay? The boogeyman. You know, and he's got Darwin under the bed right now, and he has been the cause of everything that has been happening around here.
He gazes at her in disappointment. Nodding his head, he rises to his feet.
Maybe you would be more comfortable speaking with your mother about this.
Sure.
As he puts the chair back, Francis goes back to looking under the bed. He shoots her a confused look and she waves him off.
Bye.
He exits the room. Turning back to the portal under the bed, Francis reaches out and touches it. Ducking under the edge of her bed, she slowly crawls toward the portal. A purple light flickers about Francis as she passes through the portal and into the boogie world. No longer crawling on the ground, Francis clings to the side of a cliff. Below her, a cloudy abyss waits as she holds onto the side of the cliff. Larry grabs onto her wrist.
You know what? I had a feeling you were following me, especially when you started yanking my cord.
Larry pulls Francis onto solid ground. She looks about to see giant toys and objects covering the landscape.
Where are we?
Under your bed. Sort of. You believe in the boogie world now?
This isn't happening. It's so big.
Imagine if you had a queen-size bed. Woo! Now that's big.
How am I going to find Darwin in this?
Well, we can walk or take the car.
Is that Darwin's toy car?
Yeah. You should have seen me trying to get it out of my pocket. Woo!
Do you think that the boogeyman would hurt Darwin?
No. You're the one he's after. I figured Darwin's just bait to get you under the bed. So you better watch your back. Your front, your side, your right, your left, and
as Francis walks across a spongy white surface, giant worms wrap around her legs.
Is that the boogeyman? Is that the boogeyman?
She kicks the worms away.
No! This is a peanut butter sandwich.
Why is the boogeyman after me? I mean, why doesn't he just leave me alone?
Did you ever have an imaginary friend?
Francis looks away with a guilty expression.
No. Never.
Larry nods thoughtfully.
Maybe it's just a boogie thing.
He turns, heading toward the now giant toy car, the temptrifuge still strapped to his back. Frances stands up and makes her way across the moldy sandwich.
Oh, sick.
Okay, we gotta push the car to get it started.
Hello, why don't you just use the jumper cables on your back?
Jumper cables only work on real cars. We're gonna have to push it backwards. I bet you on your educational toys.
Come on, let's just find Darwin.
They push the car backwards, revving it up.
Come on, friend, put your back into it.
I am.
Get on.
She sits on top of it, putting her foot on one of the wheels to keep it still.
Hurry, it's slipping.
Larry hops on behind her, and the car takes off at a rapid speed. The extension cord on the temptrifuge unravels as the car rockets them through the landscape of giant toys and clumps of garbage. Francis steers the car away from a pile of jacks. As they continue to careen through the boogie world, they drive along a rainbow suspender. Francis covers her face as they speed toward a large paper bag blocking their way. The car rips through it easily, leaving them unharmed.
Oh, that's like the wind in your hair.
Francis looks back to see Larry pushing back his graying hair with his long boogeyman claws. As they enter a clearing, the reel of the extension cord runs out. It yanks Larry off the back of the car as the plug in the real world remains in its socket.
Larry!
Do the cord!
Francis looks forward to see a giant headband straight ahead. Sparks fly as the car grinds against the inside curve of the band. It sends Francis into the opening of a large inline skate. The skate teeters precariously on the edge of a cliff.
Fran?
Francis steps out of the skate and touches her lip.
Fran, are you okay?
Oh, I bit my lip.
Behind her, the skate tips backwards off the cliff and into the murky abyss below. Francis gazes down at the skate as it disappears into the heavy mist.
Francis! Where am I, Francis? Francis!
Darwin!
Francis rushes to Darwin, who lies trapped inside a large sock.
Smells like a dirty sock in here.
Don't worry, Darwin, I'm gonna get you out.
Help me!
As Frances struggles to release Darwin from the tied-up sock, the boogeyman appears in the mouth of a nearby dragon toy. Meanwhile, Larry struggles to stand.
I remember when I couldn't even get these on you.
The boogeyman floats slowly across the clearing, moving closer to Frances and Darwin. Looking up, Larry spots the looming figure.
Fran!
Grabbing a cobweb-like net from a nearby tree, the boogeyman stalks closer to her. Larry stands, pulling the cord taut as he tries to warn her.
Turn real quick!
Larry picks up a giant doll eye.
Hold in four boogies!
He rolls the eye towards the boogeyman, knocking him off his feet and spinning him through the air. Frances glances behind her to see the boogeyman fall flat on his back.
Right.
Giddy, Larry runs towards the boogeyman.
Help! Larry! Larry! It's him!
He clips the jumper cables onto the boogeyman.
It's centrifuge time!
What? Are you trying to,
stop something?
Yeah.
You!
The boogeyman leaps away with the cable still attached.
Say goodbye.
No!
Larry flips the switch.
Gotcha.
Huh?
What's wrong?
Larry reaches behind him. In the real world, the cord lies unplugged.
Your extension cord has come uncurled. And now you're powerless in Boogie World.
He yanks on Larry's cord.
Don't worry, Larry. I won't hurt you. It's much more fun to just hurt you.
As he pulls Larry closer, Frances runs off.
Help!
I'm not a boogeyman yet. There's still time to bust you.
Frances pushes a large book onto the boogeyman, crushing him.
Francis! Darwin!
She climbs over the book and back to the still-trapped Darwin.
Who's Larry?
Larry!
Larry stalks over towards Frances and reaches out to her with a clawed hand. Sensing him, she turns to see he is now a full boogeyman.
Frances?
Larry?
Do you think I look a little strange?
But when you grow up,
sometimes you change.
She stands, dragging the sock away from Larry.
Larry?
Francis?
Larry, you have to fight this.
Go, Francis.
Fight what?
Larry?
He stalks after her.
Come, let's play, Francis.
She approaches the toppled book. The cover explodes as the other boogeyman leaps out from beneath it. He catches her in his net and pulls her towards him.
Larry, you don't have to be a boogeyman!
Except there's no such thing!
Franny!
Franny?
Stash Franny in someplace or other while I get rid of her little brother.
He gives Larry the net and takes the saw.
Larry, you have to help him! He needs you!
I'm scared!
If Darwin wanted me to care, he should have asked for help from Larry!
Get me out! Come on.
The boogeyman drags Darwin to the edge of the cliff.
I'm scared!
Did that hurt? Oh, I'm sorry.
Darwin, ask Larry for help. Quick, remember your friend Larry?
He's not real. You told me. You took me after me grown up.
It's scary to take such a long, long drop.
The boogeyman gazes down at the swirling mist below.
But it's even scarier when you stop.
I was wrong. I was just afraid. Darwin, I didn't know what to do, and I thought that if I was grown up, I could do anything.
You don't get second chances to be young.
Darwin!
So, you won't answer, Franny.
Francis!
Hold your tongue!
The boogeyman holds his hand over Darwin's mouth.
Darwin, can you hear me? Hey, Darwin, can you still believe in Larry? Clap your hands, okay? That's all you have to do, just clap!
Darwin starts to clap.
Stop it!
That's it. Come on, clap!
Stop it!
Larry! I need you! Help me, please! Larry!
That's it, Darwin!
Larry!
Darwin!
I need you! Ah! I do believe!
Larry's boogeyman exterior breaks apart, revealing the original Larry underneath.
I'm back! And you're busted!
The centrifuge! You gotta plug it into something!
Francis grabs the cord and pulls the plug into the boogie world. Larry grabs the other end of the sock and pulls.
That's my friend in there, you skanky creep!
The two fight over the sock.
Who's calling me?
Back up!
You're not gonna hurt my pal! There's no way, man, all right?
Grabbing the plug, Frances spots a giant battery, but the coil is too big for it. Looking about, she spots a large paperclip and picks it up. The boogeyman lets go of the sock, and Larry and Darwin fall back. As the boogeyman grabs Larry by the shirt, Frances attaches the paperclip to the plug.
You think you can win?
You're wrong!
The boogeyman tosses Larry across the clearing where he lands on his back. Frances wraps the paperclip around the battery coil.
That boogeyman is really strong.
The boogeyman floats towards Larry.
I hate to be the one to tell you, but it's not too late for me to nail you.
The boogeyman's nail grows super long. He thrusts it towards Larry, who blocks it with a crayon. Larry stands on his hands, performing breakdance moves as the two fight.
You know, I think I'm gonna be staying alive, because you can't catch up with this job. And one.
Grabbing Larry's feet, the boogeyman rolls him over beside the trapped Darwin. The boogeyman flies towards them with his long, sharp nail. He misses Larry and tears a hole in the sock, narrowly missing Darwin. Larry backflips away out of his reach and picks up a large calligraphy pen. Turning to face the boogeyman, Larry spins the pen like a bow staff. The boogeyman grins as Larry moves toward him.
Darwin!
I'm okay, but I'm not happy!
The boogeyman and Larry duel with pen and nail while Francis tries to attach the plug to the battery coil. Larry pushes the boogeyman away.
The pen is mightier than the sword!
The boogeyman grows a nail on his other hand to be super long. He grins menacingly.
The pen is mightier than two swords.
The boogeyman attacks, but Larry blocks him with the pen. He swings at Larry and misses. Larry tries to jab at him, but also misses. The boogeyman cuts the pen in half.
Of course, it's no match for a fingernail.
Larry dashes away as Francis finishes connecting the plug to the battery. Larry dodges the boogeyman's attacks as Francis grabs the centrifuge. The boogeyman grabs Larry.
Got you now.
Francis switches on the centrifuge and it sparks to life. The noise distracts the boogeyman and Larry slips from his grip. The boogeyman corners him against a doll's hand and raises his nails to strike. Francis grabs the jumper cables.
Don't do it! Don't do it!
Use a friend!
As the boogeyman turns to Francis, she clamps the cables onto his nails.
I'm getting so old. I've even forgotten how to rhyme anymore.
The boogeyman turns into an old woman.
Please, please, please. Franny.
Sparks fly off the jumper cables as the centrifuge explodes. Ripping open the hole in the gym sock, Darwin pops his head out as Francis cowers away from the explosion. The boogeyman shakes off the cables, now back to normal.
Your centrifuge, it didn't work. Now I'll get you and this imaginary jerk.
I'm not afraid of you.
He turns to her.
I beg your pardon.
I'm not afraid of you. I know who you are. You can't scare me.
Really?
As he yells, the collar of his coat turns into monstrous tentacles.
Zoe? Who's Zoe?
Only one person ever called me Franny. It was hard for me to admit it was you.
The tentacles disappear.
I didn't want it to be my fault.
The boogeyman's brow furrows in confusion as Francis steps toward him with a sympathetic look.
I'm sorry, Zoe.
No!
As the boogeyman reaches out for her, Francis gently takes his hand, entwining their fingers together. Gripping his hand, Francis gazes up at him with a hopeful expression. His expression softens as his gray hair begins to turn a coppery gold.
Zoe.
Slowly, the boogeyman's appearance fades away, revealing a pretty girl dressed in a fancy Victorian suit. The boogie world also fades, leaving them inside Francis's room.
The boogeyman's a girl? Get out of here. What are you doing, girl?
Larry, I thought it was you.
Long time no see, huh? Oh.
He spins Darwin around.
Remember your car?
He hands it to him.
Are you okay, Darwin?
I got sock fudge in my mouth.
He spits it out.
Francis?
Her parents enter the room.
Are you okay, Francis? We heard a strange noise.
Vacuuming. Under the bed.
She holds up the now broken vacuum cleaner, which Michael takes from her.
You didn't change the bag first.
Encouragement, Michael, encouragement. Francis? Honey, we came upstairs to apologize. Your father just logged on to the internet news.
The same things that were going on here just started happening last night in Centerville. They think the same people are responsible.
But most important, we know that you are not responsible. Oh, sweetheart. We are so sorry that we didn't believe you.
It's okay. It's okay, Mom. Oh.
She hugs her mom.
You were just looking for a logical explanation.
It was the boogeyman.
Darwin, you know there's no such thing as the boogeyman.
Yeah, but I saw him with his sharp teeth and claws.
Darwin, it's past your bedtime.
You tell him, Darwin.
He won't go away, will you?
Well, of course she won't go away, honey. She's your sister.
I'll be here whenever you need me. That's what friends are for.
I'm glad I can believe in you again.
I believe in you too, Francis.
Yes, honey. We all do.
Her parents and Darwin smile at her.
Good night, sweetheart.
Good night.
Her parents and Darwin leave.
So what's the story on the boogeyman here?
Zoe closes the door.
Actually, it's boogie person.
Yeah? So who are you, personally?
It's Zoe.
Francis hugs her.
Zoe's my imaginary friend.
You told me you never had an imaginary friend.
She lied. Wise up, Blair. Just because you hang around with a 7-year-old doesn't mean you have to be naive.
Zoe and I used to play all the time when I was little. Then Darwin got sick. And when we couldn't do anything to make him better, that's when I decided I had to grow up. I had to stop believing in what wasn't real.
And you started to turn into a boogeyman.
Boogie person.
I'm so sorry I stopped believing in you, Zoe.
Larry puts his hand up against his ear.
It's the guy inside his head.
That explains the echo.
On my way, big guy. Gotta go, friend.
Go where?
Centerville. You heard what your dad said about the weird things going over there? They've got a boogeyman who needs busting.
Larry spins and drops his toy pistols.
I'd better go with you. I've seen you in action, Lair, and I don't think you could handle a full tilt boogie by yourself.
You know what? I think I liked you better when you were a boogie person.
He sneers at her as he marches out of Francis's room. Zoe and Francis follow after him, now outside.
Oh, it was wonderful to see you again, Freddy. Sorry about all the trouble I caused. I didn't want to be a boogie. I just couldn't help it.
It's okay. Everything's all right, and we can be friends again, just like before.
Zoe smiles sadly and glances over at Larry.
You won't be seeing us anymore, Franny.
Francis turns to Larry.
Well, you told Darwin you wouldn't go away.
She means we won't be coming back to see you.
No, no.
Only real friends last forever, like Joanne.
But I believe in you. I believe in both of you.
The time to believe is when you're little, like Darwin. When you still need us.
I don't want to lose you again.
You won't lose me, Franny. Not as long as you remember me.
What's up, friend? You know you're too grown up to have an imaginary friend, don't you?
Well, no. I mean, I can see you guys right now, and that proves logically that...
Excuse me.
Larry walks over to Francis and steps in close. Placing his hands on her shoulders, he leans down and kisses her gently on the lips. As he pulls away, Frances touches her lips, stunned.
You're not turning into a boogeyman anymore. You don't need sunglasses.
Yeah, but they make me look cool. Hey, friend.
Maybe I am too grown up.
A friend? Just because you're getting older doesn't mean you have to get old.
Zoe and Larry smile at her. Larry snaps his fingers and the large net of Christmas lights covering the house lights up. Frances turns and beams brightly up at the colorful lights. As she turns to look back at Zoe and Larry, she finds they have disappeared. Now alone, her smile turns wistful as she gazes back at the house. Later that night, Frances dozes in her bed with a couple of dim lights on. Darwin enters and taps her on the shoulder, waking her.
Can't sleep. I'm kind of scared.
Come in.
He gets under the covers with her.
You know, the only way the boogeyman can hurt you is by making you afraid.
Yeah. Frances?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really scared of the boogeyman. I saw how you handled it. I'm worried about getting sick again.
Have you talked to Larry about it?
He said you could help me. That you could tell me how grown-ups keep from being scared.
Well, I guess they know that being afraid doesn't help. Well, so they don't let being afraid make them act afraid.
It's kind of like pretending you're not scared.
Yeah, I guess. You know, pretty soon you're not afraid anymore.
I guess it takes a lot of imagination to become a grown-up.
Sure does, sweetie.
She kisses him gently on the head and the two drift off to sleep. Seated against the headboard of the bed, Zoe and Larry gaze down at the two with gentle smiles. The two imaginary friends look at one another, then slowly fade away. Fade to black. Description by Deluxe, with funding by Walt Disney Studios. Voice by Tansy Alexander.